As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to The Athletic Baseball Show. It is Friday, April 8th. Derek Van Riper here today with a special guest. Joining me on this episode is Nick Pollock. He is the founder of The Pitcher List. Nick, thank you for joining me. How's it going for you today?
What is happening? Thank you so much for having me on here. This is an absolute honor, and it is opening day of all days. What a fantastic day it is.
The best day of the year. Really? I like opening day more than my birthday. I like opening day more than my anniversary, probably.
Wow.
It's a tie.
Sure.
It's a tie. I'm going to say it's a tie. I don't want to get in trouble. Before we get into today's topics, we're going to go through 30 teams, one question per team. So 30 teams, 30 questions, focusing heavy on pitching because pitching is your wheelhouse. And, you know, Pitcher List has been around for a few years now. For some of our listeners, they probably have heard of it already, but for some, they haven't. What do you have going this season? You have a great podcast network. You know, what have you launched? What have you added for 2022 that people should check out?
Man, you are so kind. Yeah, outside of what I normally do, which is I review every starter every single night on the site in the SP Roundup and then do a ranking the next morning of the guys for that day. We have these new player pages, which are StatCast powered. They're incredible. They have the most in-depth, granular data for pitchers. So you can see like their four-seamer and slider and understand everything you want to know with them. They're what I use exclusively now just to do all my pitching analysis. So you should go check them out. We have them for everybody. We also have them for hitters. But you have a lot of stuff. And yeah, come on by to pitcherlist.com. Say hi. And we'd love to meet you.
And Nick is on Twitter at PitcherList. If you're not following him already, give him a follow. Those player pages look amazing. It's one of the best ways. If you're just looking to get a look at every pitcher's arsenal, go to the player page. You can actually see that. I love that. It's my favorite thing about the tools you have in place. I think the other thing you've done exceptionally well, you guys have the most eye-catching graphics. I've told you this before. It's a broken record compliment. It's so hard not to click on something that comes from you or one of your other writers because the promotional graphics on social are just outstanding and they're great on the site as well. So 30 questions, 30 teams. We're going to go A to Z or A to W more specifically. Every team covered because it's the time of year, Nick. It doesn't matter what team you follow, what team you root for. You've got something to be excited about, even if your team probably isn't going to the playoffs this year. And that describes quite a few of the teams that we will talk about over the course of this episode, but a lot of pitching questions here. We're going to start with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks have a new pitching coach. Brent Strom did great work in Houston for a long time. Zach Gallen, hailed by many as the ace of this rotation, even though it's Madison Bumgarner getting the opening day assignment. Simple question here. Outside of Zach Gallen, who is the best starter in Arizona's rotation right now?
I mean, that's not fair because I am a Gallen gal. But you can make a case for Madison Bumgarner. He is throwing 90-91 instead of the 89 that we've normally been seeing in previous years. And we saw him at 90-91, actually even 92 at times last year, and had success with that. But I'm going to go with Merrill Kelly. And this is a complete mystery box answer because I've only heard reports about Merrill Kelly throwing harder and having a new approach because we really haven't seen him on TV, which is such a disservice to all his baseball fans. But 13 strikeouts, one hit, and zero walks allowed in the 7 innings pitch you saw this spring. That's kind of eye-popping, and I'm really excited to see him pitch. So it could be Merrill Kelly that goes off and does it, but we all know that, like, Bumgarner is fine, and it might just be that. And he's a very good representation for the status of the Diamondbacks right now because of it. I hope both of them fight, and they both deserve to be that proper number two.
Yeah, this is a sneaky good team, actually, in the longer term sense. They've got a nice group of prospects graduating to the big leagues probably within the next 2 seasons. Some of those guys, like Alec Thomas, we talked about him, I think, last week. He could be part of the offense sooner rather than later. Corbin Carroll's an impact guy. There's good young pitching there. Dre Jameson among the arms we'll probably see in the not-so-distant future. But definitely a better team on paper than people realize, even in their current build. Let's shift the focus over to the defending World Series champions in Atlanta. The NL East is going to be tough this year, and I felt like the Braves did a really good job this offseason strengthening their bullpen, replacing Freddie Freeman about as effectively as you can by making the Matt Olson trade and then extending him. The guy I want to talk to you about, though, is Max Fried, because if you play fantasy baseball, if you're an Atlanta fan, it just seems like there is a lot of helium right now, very high expectations for Fried entering 2022. How does he meet them? What do you think goes right? What do you think Fried does to possibly take that next step and really become maybe a top 15 or top 20 starter in this league?
Yeah, the thing that's made Max Fried really good over the years has been fastball command and just being able to get efficient outs with that pitch. His curveball and slider are the elements where I think that would be the easiest way for improvement. If he's more consistent with that curveball, he's able to turn that maybe into a whiff pitch. The slider is like 16% swing strike rate, which is a little below average of a slider. We saw times when he first came up 2019, that second half, when the slider became more of that whiff pitch, and it kind of fell back to the 16% range. If he can make that 18 to 20, that could work. And guess what? In the spring, we've seen a near 3-tick increase in velocity on that slider to be a tighter one around 89 instead of 86. That might be it. You know, we haven't seen the best Max Fried, though. Command's been a little bit off in the spring, so I'm really excited to see that. But that might be the answer for Fried, and not to mention, he's also throwing a tick harder on his fastball right now, too. So maybe just throw harder, Fried, and there you go. You become a stellar ace with a 26-27% strikeout rate instead of the 24 we've been seeing.
Yeah, it might be more of a co-ace situation with Morton and Fried in Atlanta if that velocity increase holds for Fried. Would love to see that actually hold up for him over the course of this season. I mentioned up top, not every team we're going to talk about has immediate playoff aspirations. That, I think, is a fair description of the Orioles. But as a pitching junkie, who else are you tuning in to watch in the O's rotation beyond John Means? I think you and Eno Saris, you guys have given John Means proper credit for what he's been able to accomplish since breaking into this rotation a few years back. Is there anyone else that you like in that current group of starters that you think could emerge to at least be a fun watch, even if they're not necessarily going to bring back a lot in trade for the Orioles or help this team surprise us in some way?
Right. It's Matt Harvey who might be signing today is what they said. Now, I would say it's the young guys that honestly are what you're going to be looking forward to this year. Obviously, Grayson Rodriguez, whenever he does come up, he might be the definitive number one pitching prospect. Keith Law can talk a lot more about that than I can. I actually used to joke that DL Hall was better than Mackenzie Gore. And this was back in 2019 after seeing one inning of each. And I would always say DL Hall is better. And up to, like, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I was right.
You were looking very right up until 2 weeks ago. Yes.
I mean, I knew that I didn't know what I was talking about, but I did like that one inning from DL Hall having electric stuff in this, like, super hard fastball with amazing slider. It looks like Josh Hader, essentially. While Mackenzie Gore, of course, being more polished guy at the time, teetered off and now is apparently looking much better. Kyle Bradish is the one, though, I think that we're going to be seeing somewhat soon. For the Orioles, he seems like the next call-up that they would go for. And solid stuff, 94-95, has some good secondaries, looks more polished and ready to go. That's about it. Jordan Lyles isn't someone I really want to go for. Bruce Zimmerman, it's just not, it's not it. Taylor Wells, no, not for me. So I would say those are the young guys that you should be looking out for through the year.
Yeah, I like the young players they've got coming up. I think there's a little more depth in their system than I was giving them credit for even 6 to 8 weeks ago. And I think as those players move through AA and AAA especially, there's a path for the Orioles to be competitive again, probably more like 2024 still, but they're going to be a lot more watchable this season and next season than they were in 2021.
Definitely.
Grayson Rodriguez is going to be must-see TV when he comes up. I'm so excited for that. Even if it's only five innings at a time because they're, you know, carefully monitoring him for the long haul, I'm going to be really excited to watch him once we get that opportunity. I would say Tyler Wells, of the non-means guys that are holding down spots right now, I thought he was in the mix to be the closer. They're giving him a shot as a starter. Some of the underlying metrics in the Enoceris pitching model, they justify that decision. And I'm just really curious to see how it works out for them, because I wouldn't have made that move, but I understand why they are making that move given the current state of their roster.
Sure.
Let's stay in the AL East. Let's talk about the Red Sox. The absence of Chris Sale for the first 2 months is significant. They stayed afloat without him for a large portion of last year. Leaning into their depth right away, though, is this a playoff caliber pitching staff as it's built?
No. I mean, you kind of saw that last year where they didn't really have that much depth to them, and they got ousted from the playoffs. You lost Eduardo Rodriguez, and it kind of gets replaced with Tanner Houck, but it's not the same. Eduardo Rodriguez is just much more sturdy, and you're going to get more quality innings out of it. Tanner Houck, I am so excited about, but I do question his ability to go deeper into games. Is that slider going to get enough strikes to be able to do that? And then there's nothing else. Maybe we see Garrett Whitlock show up and actually do that. We've been hearing rumblings about it, and they're not moving forward with it now, but maybe later on. But Michael Wacha and Rich Hill are not the answers here. I wouldn't be surprised if you see June, July, the A's are ready to talk more about Montas, and the Red Sox are right in the thick of that. I really hope for Boston fans, you don't get radio stations saying, oh, no, the move of the trade deadline was to get back Chris Sale. No. You need more than that, especially in that AL East right now. So it is a tough situation, and I would say something needs to go incredibly right for them to be that competitive.
Yeah, I think if you had to tell yourself a story that the Red Sox exceeded expectations pitching-wise this year, it's probably Tanner Houck giving them more volume than we're expecting. I think the biggest question I have is, how does he hold up going five or six innings every fifth day? Does he fade at the end of the season? I think in terms of stuff, I think he could be really good. I think he was dominant against righties last year too. So I think there's a lot to build off of there. Eovaldi to me is still one of those guys that is close to an ace when he's healthy, but he still has elevated injury risk because of the stuff he's dealt with over the course of his career. And there probably is a lot riding on Whitlock and how they deploy him. Maybe Whitlock gets deployed the way they deployed Houck last year, and that ends up being optimal usage. But it's got to be more than Sale getting healthy. I'm 100% with you. If they're going to keep the other lineups quiet in the AL East, that division is going to be an absolute battle again this season. Let's move over to the AL Central and talk about the White Sox. This is a broader question. On our season preview episode, which ran on Thursday, the White Sox were a clean sweep to win the AL Central. There was no disagreement between Eno and Britt Jaroli and I. If one player on this team is going to win an AL MVP award or the AL Cy Young, who is your choice and why?
Dylan Cease. I'm just kidding. It's not Dylan Cease. It's obviously to me Lucas Giolito. There's even talk of him throwing harder, and I tried to get extra information on it. I asked Benetti. I was like, hey, do you have velocity readings? Because we don't. He goes, nah, sorry. I'm like, okay. And it's frustrating because I really do feel we would be talking a lot more about Giolito right now if we had confirmation that he was throwing harder. He threw 93.8 last year. And if Giolito's throwing 95 to 96 with consistency, that is a huge, huge difference and could elevate him into the highest, you know, the top echelon of starters in the majors. That would make all the difference in the world. And on the other side, it's hard to bet against Luis Robert, honestly. I mean, he's such a talent. And you would think that if they are having these World Series aspirations, Luis Robert's got to be the guy right at the forefront of it. The White Sox should win a lot of games. He's going to be right in the thick of it. Those are the two easy picks I'm going to take.
a player that can do everything. And I think people outside of fantasy circles and outside of White Sox fanhood are going to realize how good he is this year.
Yes.
We're going to see it with health from Luis Robert this year. So I'm absolutely with you there. Let's stay in Chicago. Let's talk about the Cubs, where I think the door is probably more open in the NL Central than it ought to be because of the Brewers getting adequate replacements for their holes, but not necessarily getting a lot better this offseason. So how do you feel about the Cubs with their current collection of pitchers and an apparent closer committee? Because this is a weird build. Like they seem to have a philosophy about pitching that is very different than teams like the Dodgers, the Rays, and the Astros. Velocity doesn't seem that important to the Cubs up and down the way they have built that rotation for the last couple of seasons now. Do you think this can work from a pitching perspective? Because if they're going to surprise, they have to have a few things come through really in the group of starters and in that group of relievers.
Yeah, no, this isn't going to work. But I mean, no, I remember Eno mentioning that last year, how the Cubs are trying to zag while everyone else is zigging, right? And, you know, leaning in on Kyle Hendricks, for example, and Alec Mills. And now they got Wade Miley. And both of those last two guys are hurt right now. And I would think that Wade Miley would be the one that would stand out outside of Stroman and Hendricks. Maybe Drew Smiley finds that 94-mile-per-hour fastball again that he had the end of 2020. But man, I mean, Justin Steele, and by the way, I always need to say, like, Justin Steele. Like that's how you have to say that name. And Keegan Thompson, those are not the answers. The bullpen, Rowan Wick, David Robertson, Michael Givens, I don't think that this is something for us to get excited about either. It's going to be rough, honestly. Adbert Elsley was the one shining light for the season because he threw over 93 miles per hour and had this really nice slider. And what do you know? He's out with a strained lat, and it won't be soon that you'll see him. It's going to be probably second half, mostly, most likely. That's rough. I really do not see this working out for the Cubs.
I think Caleb Killian ends up being important for them if they surprise us, because I think he pitched well in the fall league. He does bring velocity and better stuff than most of their current stars. I'm with you on Alzolay. That injury news, that was pretty early in the winter. That was one, as soon as we found out about it, I was so bummed. I thought there was a breakout coming from him. We've seen, if you Frankenstein the best of Adbert Alzolay together, you get a very interesting mid-rotation starter with strikeouts. So it's a little bit of wish casting that he was going to put it all together. I'm bummed we're not going to get a chance to see it probably until at least the second half, if not until 2023.
Right. There's also Braylon Marquez, I should mention here, who was a really, you know, well-touted prospect for a while, came up and had one of the worst debuts you'll ever see. But I think that he'll get his chance this season pretty soon, especially with how beat up that staff is. Maybe Corey Abbott as well. There are some intriguing names for the Cubs, but it's really rough right now, and things are just going to have to go exactly right for this to work out.
Let's stay in the NL Central. Let's talk Reds, where we have two rookies in the rotation. Actually, more than two, if you want to count Reaver San Martin as part of this. But two highly regarded prospects, Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo. I am curious, which of those two do you think has the better rookie season?
I think it's Lodolo. I am not going to sit here and tell you I know everything about pitching prospects. Absolutely not. I'm a guy who, when I see them on the major stage, I have my frame of reference. And I can talk about them better. And my understanding of Hunter Green is that he throws very hard, but very hittable without these amazing secondaries. And I see Nick Lodolo, and I've watched them in the spring a lot. I see a well in control pitcher with a fastball that is deceptive and hard to hit, with a really nice slider pair. He looks so much more polished to me as a pitcher. I think he's going to slide right into Cincinnati after that. I guess it's the sixth start of the season and just live there the entire year. While Hunter Green is what I call a cherry bomb. He's either super sweet or he blows up. And they're going to see that all the time from Hunter Green. You're going to see these five innings of 7 Ks and 1 earned run. Then the next time out, be 4 innings of 5 earned runs and 2 walks and 2 Ks, and it's just going to be maddening to watch. And Lodolo, I think, is just going to be like, hey, cool, I'm a major leaguer. I know how to get through this.
I think I've looked at them as Lodolo having the safer floor for a long time and Green having a lofty ceiling, and it's just a question of whether he can change the fastball a little bit, add some deception, improve the secondaries. If those things happen, the sky's the limit, but we need to see those things happen before we can assume that it's going to work at the highest level. And plus, Great American Ballpark, very unforgiving for pitchers making mistakes.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Staying in Ohio, Cleveland, the recent success they have had as an organization, I think, comes back to success getting more mileage than expected out of a lot of their pitchers. If we assume Shane Bieber is healthy again, who is Cleveland's second best starting pitcher at this point? Because that's a wide open battle behind Bieber right now.
That is so tough. I'm going to say it's Aaron Civale. I think he's the most well-put-together guy right now. Cutter, curveball are both excellent. He throws his cutter sometimes 30% of the time just to use it as a strike-ending pitch, and it's really hard to hit. The curveball could actually take a step forward. It was around 60% usage last year. Excellent CSW marks, call strike plus whiffs, and that could be a 25% plus offering. And then those two together could really push Civale further, where allowing him to save his sliders and changeups and even fastballs in deeper counts to get whiffs, elevate those heaters. He does a really good job of that. But sometimes it doesn't work out that way and it blows up well. And then there's Tristan McKenzie, who had this really nice second half, right? Increased his velocity, looked a lot more in command. In fantasy land, we like Tristan McKenzie more because of the caper walk numbers and just the general excitement about his stuff. But if you really want to talk about the Guardian staff this year, Civale looks primed to be that number two that is just consistent every 5 days and giving them a good chance of winning, while McKenzie's probably going to be a bit more volatile.
Yeah, I liked what McKenzie did in the second half for sure. I hope he can have that kind of consistency over a full season. And I think we've got more prospects on the way in Cleveland, too. We might see Logan T. Allen at some point this year taking on a spot. Cody Morris, if he gets healthy, I think could be their second best starter from the day that he shows up in Cleveland, but he's down with a shoulder injury right now on the 60-day IL. So it looks like they've got more in the pipeline. Also encouraging to see them give the extension to Jose Ramirez, because for most of the winter, up until like 3 days ago, it really looked like Jose Ramirez was going to be traded at some point this season. And it's good to see Cleveland actually keep one of its star players.
And Daniel Espino, I should say, he's the number two in 2023, likely. I mean, he's going to be in AA this year and then probably make a go for it in spring training. Maybe they push him back for a month so he shows up in May 2023 and then just absolutely dominates. I mean, what is this, a 45% strikeout rate in 49 innings last year in A-plus ball is just the funniest thing ever.
Absolutely ridiculous. Let's get to the Rockies, the team that I feel like I need to say more nice things about, but they don't do things often that kind of steer me in that direction. So this is probably the most open-ended question of all that I'm going to ask you on this episode. If you were in charge of solving pitching, just pitching, you're solving pitching for this franchise, how would you go about it? What would you do differently than what they have tried to this point in their existence?
You know, with the Rockies, we give them such a hard time, but they've done one thing really well. And that's to hold on to Germán Márquez. That is such an unbelievably valuable thing for them, where they have Márquez on this great team contract, and everyone knows he's very good, and if he leaves Colorado, he would get better, sure. But the number one thing that the Rockies struggle with is signing quality free agent pitching. Why? Because no one wants to pitch there. So what you have to do is you have to acquire pitching through one of two ways, either through trades or from your own draft picks. And so they have Márquez on this nice, comfortable deal. This is the thing that they're trying to replicate. There's no way they're going to give that up. So if I am the Rockies, that's how I'm emphasizing my team completely, is I have to be overselling myself for draft picks and trades and pitching. and then signing hitters, just completely relying on me signing free agent hitters because, yeah, Chris Bryant just did. Sure, throw a lot of money towards pitching. You'll get like a Chris Bryant or something like that. You also get a lot of guys that maybe want to reinvigorate their career by hitting in the best pitching, the best hitting ballpark. So those are the first two things I would do. And then specifically on how to win in Coors, I would do something that they actually do lean on a bit, which is a ground ball focused pitcher, but then ensure that I have an infield defense along the lines of like the Cardinals or so. Really emphasize I want ground ball guys and then the best defenders to do it. The less you can emphasize how large that outfield is in Colorado and take that away from opposing hitters, I think you're giving yourself more of a chance. That's what I would do. It's not an easy situation. I mean, honestly, if I owned the Rockies, I would probably sell them or move somewhere. That's what I would do. Because you just can't. You're just making your life always difficult if you do this. But yeah, I mean, that's why they have to do it. I don't have really expectations that they're going to dramatically do this. But if I'm the Rockies, that's what you got to do.
Yeah, I think you know, pitching in defense, good defense plays everywhere anyway. So yeah. Aside from making yourself more effective in your home park, you're going to be much better off going on the road while your hitters are struggling to put runs on the board because the ball moves differently. There's so much. I feel like you have to lean into your R&D department and you need to be at the forefront of sports science if you're trying to win baseball games in Colorado. And they don't do those things. No. And I think that's the part that gets me the most frustrated. They should be like the most tech savvy organization in the league because of their unique circumstances. And they kind of go the other direction.
Oh, it's not even kind of. It's like it's just the other side completely. And it's so frustrating. I mean, what they if I would make one deal, I would be on the phone with the Marlins every single day being like, what does it take to get Sandy Alcantara? Because that is the kind of pitcher you want. A hard throwing ground ball machine. It's exactly the kind of guy you want. But then again, he did allow, 11 runs in Coors last year? So maybe not. Maybe I've known nothing about this.
I wonder if you'd also want to emphasize deception with fastballs, right? You need guys that throw a lot of fastballs because breaking balls don't move the same way.
Right.
But then you would need guys that are undervalued because they don't have premium velocity. They just have decent velocity. I think about like Freddy Peralta, right? His debut, I think, was in Colorado and he was amazing. He's exactly that kind of guy where he has that deception. That's the sort of Joe Ryan's got the funky fastball. This is anybody who has a weird fastball is probably the kind of pitcher that you would like to try and either develop, find via trade or find via any method possible. I think that's the easier tweak. And then there's obviously bigger stuff that you could try that require a significant investment and a lot of research and things that are not my area of expertise. Let's talk about the Tigers for a moment, Nick. They are a candidate for most improved team of 2022. They've got a nice trio of young pitchers behind Eduardo Rodriguez. They've got an improving defense. They got young position players coming up to make an impact. Love seeing Spencer Torkelson on the opening day roster. There's still plenty of time for him to turn it around, but I want to know, what do you think went wrong with Matt Manning last year? Because it wasn't just his time in the big leagues that was a problem. It was also what was happening at AAA Toledo.
Yeah, there just isn't enough from Matt Manning. Last year when we saw success from him, it was when he increased his velocity on his fastball closer to 95 as opposed to the 93.5 that we saw for the entirety of the season. And the secondaries are, it's not quite there. I remember actually when I was fed information about prospect pitchers, the one thing I heard was Matt Manning's curveball is a really nice curveball. I was like, great, I can't wait for this debut. And it was just very underwhelming. Wasn't even thrown that often. And what we saw this spring at first was very encouraging for Matt Manning, where he was throwing 94, 95 consistently, well above that 93.5. And then the last start of the year, it was under 93. And somewhere there is a clip of me reacting to seeing it and just my absolute disappointment. It's just not what you want. You were like, oh, let's try and be encouraged about Matt Manning again because he's so reliant on that with some sliders. And no, it really does feel like it's going to take a long time to fix it in some way. We do see it sometimes. Some guys get their velocities back or they somehow learn some new pitch or whatever. It just feels like right now there's a lot to do to get Matt Manning to where we need him to be.
I'll still remain perplexed by the way that the way people in the prospect community ranked Casey Mize, Matt Manning, and Tarek Skubal, how different it is from how it's turned out, where I feel like right now most people would be in on Skubal if they could only have one, and Manning would be a clear third on that right. list that people were ranking them today, whereas previously it was kind of like Mize versus Manning, Skubal last because, you know, he had kind of a different path, wasn't as early of a draft pick, had TJ back in college, right? There were more questions about him previously. Now it's just a question of whether or not he can reduce some of the hard contact that he's been allowing in the big leagues. But I am optimistic, especially after speaking to you on the Pitcher List pod just over a week ago about him.
I'm glad to hear. I'm glad to hear, DVR, that you're coming back in on the Tarek Skubal train. You know, Shelly Verstray and Trevor Huth, two people I really respect when it comes to prospect analysis, have been in on Skubal from the beginning over Mize. I love to see it. That's the real Detroit story for me this year. I want to see how Tarek Skubal develops in 2022.
On the watchability index, they're going from about a 3 or 4 last season to about an 8 or a 9 this year.
Yeah.
Even if it's not a playoff year for the Tigers, they will be very watchable on a regular basis. Let's head down to Houston. In a strange way, I feel like Zach Greinke leaving and Lance McCullers being hurt, those two things are almost more problematic than Carlos Correa signing with the Twins, because they've got Jeremy Peña there. They seem very high on Peña. And Peña doesn't have to completely one-for-one replace Correa. They've got a good, balanced offense as they're constructed. But we were split on the show yesterday, the preview show, talking about who's going to win the AL West. We had a Houston. We had a Seattle from Eno. I'm on the Angels to win the AL West this year. So I'm just going to ask you, are the Astros still the top class of this division?
Oh, man, Angels winning it? I mean, I'm wearing this Shohei Ohtani shirt. Nothing would make me happier than the Angels winning the division. I think that'd be the best thing in baseball if the Angels win the World Series. Oh, my God. I mean, Trout and Ohtani deserve this so much. There's so much hanging on that rotation, though. And, I mean, we know it's not the A's. We know it's not the Rangers. So, really, the other question is, are the Mariners as good as they need to be for the Astros? And a lot of indications last year were that their offense overperformed a bit. They won more games than that rotation kind of deserved. It's really more of a Mariners question. The Astros, I think, are fine. They still have a great rotation. Verlander is throwing 95 and looking good. Urquidy, I think he's going to give you more than 100 innings, and that should be a really nice storyline to follow through the entire year. Hopefully Lance McCullers shows up before the All-Star break and then really dominates again. There's just a lot of guys to like there. And Luis Garcia, you guys convinced me on, you know, Luis Garcia actually being more than what I was giving him credit for. And then that offense, honestly, I think Kyle Tucker is going to develop more. People forget he's 25. You know, we kind of think of him as this finished product almost. And no, I don't necessarily think that. I think Kyle Tucker can do a lot more things. Yes, Correa left and you have Peña, which is a downgrade, I understand, but Bregman could be better than he was last year. Really injury prone, or really was dealing with injuries last year, I should say. Altuve's still amazing. There are a lot of really great players on that team still. And the Mariners, well, if the Mariners are going to win that division, it's going to be their pitching that's going to bring them there. And that's a big question mark. I'm excited about Matt Brash and Logan Gilbert and Robbie Ray. But there are significant challenges that each need to overcome this season. Maybe we see George Kirby appear, or even Emerson Hancock, to pull them up. Marco Gonzalez, is he? What is Marco Gonzalez? I don't know. And Chris Flexen, same a thing. So there are a lot of question marks in that rotation. And hopefully Winker isn't so bad moving from Cincinnati. So I know I took a lot longer on this one, but it's a really fun battle we're going to be looking at the entire year. You still have to give it to the Astros. They've just kind of been this good, and they haven't changed enough for me to remove their crown at the moment.
Yeah, I think Marco Gonzalez and Chris Flexen are Tobies. I think that's what I would call them.
They absolutely are, and you'll be happy if they are Tobies through the year, honestly, if you're a Seattle Mariner fan.
Yeah, if you get good, really good stuff from Ray, Gilbert, and Brash, and you get two Tobies chewing up the innings in the back with Gonzalez and Flexen, and you get the extra help from someone like Kirby, that's huge. Like that gets it done, especially with that bullpen. Seattle's bullpen is all kinds of nasty. Let's talk about the Royals for a second. This is one Eno mentioned in the preview show. He's not buying Kansas City's pitching development. He likes a lot of things they've done as an organization, but the way they see pitching, different. Not even quite like the way the Cubs see pitching, but just different compared to the rest of the league. So is there anybody in this rotation that you're optimistic about behind Zach Greinke? Greinke's Greinke, even in his old age, he's fun. He's always been in some fashion. But what about all these young starters they've been trying to develop? Are there any that you still believe in?
Oh, I can't help myself but believe in Daniel Lynch still. I listen to Eno all the time, of course. I mean, he's incredible, and I can't get him out of my head about, yeah, that Kansas City development, right? But then there's Daniel Lynch, this tall lefty that has a slider that has returned double-digit whiffs in a major league game. And, man, if he's able to do that with consistency and then pepper that fastball up and in, like, there is so much to like there. Then there's Jackson Coart, throws 95, but it's still really hittable. And it does seem to me that the Royals are getting pitchers with more hittable fastballs than their velocity would suggest. Carlos Hernandez is the same way. Doesn't have the command of his secondaries quite yet. But Chris Bubich kind of gets by with his low 90s. And maybe if he can get to 92 consistently and get that changeup lower in the zone, it constantly floats to middle. And it frustrates me to no end. If you just get that down. I mean, there are interesting elements of each pitcher here that if they do become their best selves, we will be talking about them a lot. But yeah, I mean, the fact that the Royals' pitching development just isn't that good gives you, I guess, worry that they can actually take that step.
I think if I had to pick one, Carlos Hernandez is the guy that I like most for 2022. Sure. I'm with you on the command issues. I like that he gets the fastball up pretty consistently. That's huge. If he's going to throw it that much, he's got to stay up in the zone. I think the secondary is having a deeper arsenal than some of these other guys, especially like the Brad Keller types. And, oh, God, no more Brad Keller, please. I'm in on Hernandez exceeding some expectations this year, but he's a little different than a lot of the other young pitchers that they're trying to bring along right now in Kansas City. I'm glad you are in on Reed Detmers as we go to the Angels.
Oh, yeah.
And
because
part of my prediction of the Angels winning the West is Reed Detmers being very good and healthy, and I think it's having a healthy Thor and keeping guys like Otani and Rendon and Trout all healthy too. They don't have a lot of margin for error really at any part of their roster if they start to lose players. Like, they are not a deep team whatsoever. They are good in their starting nine. They're good for most of their rotation, and they're actually pretty good with their A bullpen. So that's why I think they tick all the boxes where if they catch health just right, they're going to exceed expectations. But Reed Detmers, how is he going to prove that his struggles upon arrival last year were actually a fluke?
Can he shout from the mound saying that he was only 22 years old last July? Like, I mean, I think that's the thing that he should be able to say. Like, guys, I'm super young at this. Remember your boy Trout? He was bad when he first came up. Okay, give me a chance here. You know, Reed Detmers has a fastball he elevates well, a curveball that he throws for strikes, and a slider that gets whiffs. We even saw it last year in a start. It was great against the Astros, and got me really amped. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I am not going to forget about Reed Detmers. I'm a little upset that there's been so much hype around it because I don't get to sneak in my Reed Detmers stuff anymore. I'm really thrilled about that. But as you mentioned, the big if you were just saying is if they get health just right. I mean, this is the Angels. The Angels are just cursed for whatever reason when it comes to health. It's the classic story. And it was even that if Detmers didn't make the rotation out of the gate, he was going to get there eventually because of that expected health. The way I talk about six-man rotations, too, there's a lot of talk about that. Like, oh, yeah, they have a six-man. They're going to do it. It's really like a 5.5 with Otani, who's just kind of slot in every so often. But in the essence, though, six-man rotations are like the Fellowship of the Ring. You know, they start off with grand ambitions, and at the end of it, it's just two guys barely surviving, right? That's what you should expect when you hear six-man rotation. And you're going to see some Jansen junk and some Packy Knott and all of that fun stuff randomly through the year because not everyone's going to survive. I mean, I'm personally down on Thor, where I see him at 95. I'm like, wait a second, you were at 97, 98 when you were quote unquote great. And that great was a 120 plus whip for 2018 and 2019. And you're not throwing your slider like you used to either. That was the major pitch that got us all excited. So I have my question marks here. Reed Detmers, though, is going to be a shining grace with, of course, the Irish Panda himself, Patrick Sandoval, with one of the best changeups in the majors. Can't wait for those two to just go and excel as southpaws in Los Angeles.
80-grade nickname for Patrick Sandoval, the Irish Panda. Let's talk about the Dodgers for a moment. Simple question here. Will Craig Kimbrel be the steady presence in the ninth inning that many are hoping he will be? I mean, that trade, I think, was surprising. I think people expected Kimbrel to go somewhere. I don't think most of us, if we were given five teams as guesses, I don't think most of us would have had the Dodgers in that group of five.
Right. Yeah, I haven't heard Craig Kimbrel and steady in the same sentence for a long time. I don't think so. I think the Dodgers are going to Dodger where, you know, I have a thing called Dodgeritis, which is more so for their starting pitchers when they would just cycle in everybody and they would get like four or five innings. You can never predict when they were going to start and how long they were going to go. And I imagine the Dodgers with their bullpen right now, Blake Treinen, they're even Dylan Betances there too now. Daniel Hudson, they are going to just do the hot hand and run with it. I don't really think that Kimbrel is going to be that Jansen that they had for years. Kimbrel, you know? He's going to not be the stud reliever all of a sudden, and the Dodgers are going to have to work with that. So I don't have much faith here.
I just think they're not going to be as patient with Kimbrel if it goes wrong as they were right when Kenley Jansen would hit a bumpy patch, because they don't have that. They don't have a long-term deal. They don't have that long-term relationship there. They don't have that loyalty that they're going to act on. They're going to make the best possible move as quickly as possible within that group. And they find good relievers on the scrap heap. Betances, you and I both know Dylan Betances is going to throw critical innings at some point now, because
he's
always had interesting stuff. We all forgot about him. It's going to be like the seventh inning of a game in October, and Betances is going to come in, be a little bit of traffic, but he'll strike out the side, and we'll be like, wow, any other team in the league could have had Dylan Betances, but of course the Dodgers got him.
Can I tell you a very quick tangential story about Dylan Betances? Very quick. It was my senior year of high school. I was pitching against Grand Street, and there I am, this lanky 6'4" dude, and steps into the box is this even lankier guy who is just getting his last at-bat because he's about to go and pitch in the state tournament for Grand Street and then get drafted by the Yankees, and Dylan Betances. And I threw a 2-1 fastball right down the middle, like 70% velocity of it, right? I'm talking like 65 or something. And he crushes it. I've never seen a ball go as far as this one. Dylan Betances, left center field. My friend was catching. He steps out in front of home plate, takes off his mask, and goes, wow, looking at this pitch. and like the ball sailed, you know, into the distance, into a white speck in the night. And all I thought was, oh my God, that is the last home run Dylan Betances will ever hit. And I've been dying to ask him this for 15 years. Because he gets drafted. He doesn't hit in the minors. He doesn't hit in the majors, has not hit a home run in the majors yet. And I want to know if he remembers the lanky 6'4" white dude on the mound who allowed that pitch.
He might have forgot you. I bet he remembers the pitch. I know he remembers how far he hit it. Because if it's the last home run he ever hit, he remembers a lot of things about it. So at least two out of those three details are remembered. It's possible he remembers you, though. Did you have like a mullet? Did you have anything that made you stand out at that time? Like, you didn't dye your hair blonde in high school?
Oh God. Oh, I can't even imagine what that would look like. I mean, maybe it was like, whoa, I thought I was the thinnest one here. You know, that might have been it. I don't know. I gotta ask him.
Incredible. I didn't know I knew someone that served up a homer to Dylan Betances before. So I learned something every day. Let's go to the Marlins. If you were ranking all 30 rotations, where approximately would you put this group right now? Because the starting five they have is excellent, and they have depth behind that group. You mentioned Sandy Alcantara a little earlier. I mean, he's an ace that doesn't get as much national attention because he's doing it in Miami right now. But you start to think about the prospects. Yuri Perez, very young for the level, starting at AA. Max Meyer's not far away. This is a team that actually has major league pitching it can trade, and they can still keep getting better. Edward Cabrera is still there, and he's not even in the rotation right now. How high would you rank them?
I have to say top five. It is actually more of an indication of there are a few rotations that are truly complete at the moment. I even like the Yankees, I think, are actually a very good one, but is it number five of Nestor Cortez? I mean, I don't really know how that one is going to shape out. And the Marlins, I mean, as you mentioned, I'm a giant Sandy Alcantara stan. There's Trevor Rogers, who I think is going to excel this year. Pablo Lopez, who is amazing as well. Jesus Luzardo, who's throwing 97 now with an emphasis of curveballs, which is huge, and he can have a huge renaissance this year in Miami. Yeah, and who was that number five? It was Eliezer Hernandez. He got a contusion on a comebacker into his forearm. He might not even be ready for the first start. It could be, as you mentioned, Edward Cabrera. But even like in season, I would say by June, we could absolutely be seeing the best rotation in baseball if all these things hit properly, with maybe Max Meyer there replacing someone else. And then, yeah, Perez. Perez wasn't even on our radar as someone to talk about with the rotation a month ago, and he's just been incredible and wowed all of us. It's fun for me, a pitching fan, to have this team that every single time I turn on the TV and watch their game, I know I'm going to have a good time watching their arms. So it has to be in the top five. I will say that they don't have that 1-2-3 of the Brewers, for example, and Eric Lauer's increased velocity could be very interesting. Adrian Hauser is looking all right. Aaron Ashby's going to be there too. It's hard for me to contest that, that kind of top heavy rotation. But yeah, the Marlins need to be in that conversation.
Yeah, speaking of the Brewers, I had a rare position player question for you for this one.
How dare you?
Why would you ask the pitcher list guy? Why would you ask him a non-pitcher question? I'm actually torn on this one. Obviously, people that listen to the show might know that I'm a Brewers fan, so this is a situation that's near and dear to me, and I can't evaluate it objectively. Who is more likely to give us 2019 flashbacks this season? Christian Yelich or Keston Hira? And they're coming from very different places, of course. Yelich was at least mostly healthy last year, and Hira was just completely lost. But if you're picking one to have a bounce back to that 2019 level, who is it and why?
I'd say it's Andrew McCutchen with his 358 WOBA in 2019.
I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, right. I mean, Hira isn't going to have a 400 BABIP again.
Nope.
And Yelich isn't the same after the back injury. And I guess I'm going to lean with Yelich that maybe it fully heals and he finds a way to get the same, I don't know, drive on the ball that he's completely lost. Or maybe the fly ball rates. I mean, it was a 24% rate last year and 36 in 2019 for Yelich's fly ball rate. Like, that needs to change. And if that does, if he's able to go away from the ground ball heavy approach again, that's the most likely one. I think Keston Hira is still going to be good, but it's not going to be anything close to that 2019. And at least there's some inkling of, hey, do this again from Christian Yelich that could get him there.
Yeah, if you said you can have 85% of 2019 Yelich and you can also have 60 to 70% of 2019 Hira, I think Brewers fans would be very happy with those outcomes,
yes,
given what just transpired last season with both of those players. Let's go to the Twins. There's a pretty big divide on Joe Ryan in various circles. I'm curious to know, what do you think the Twins have in him?
I don't know. I mean, what I saw was five games, okay? And Joe Ryan went against the Guardians, which was Jose Ramirez and friends. And then you have the Cubs as well, who are already depleted after selling off Rizzo, Bryant, and Baez,
real
right?
Bad. Yeah.
Four of those starts, and one of them was a double-digit strikeout game. So then all of a sudden, his strikeout rate looks amazing. And then you go against the Tigers, who improved a lot last year. They actually became like a good offense in that second half, and he got destroyed. And I don't know how to assess Joe Ryan, because it's a lot of faith of seeing how batters react to the heater. It does not look like on paper that it should be an elite fastball. But what we've seen for the most part is that he throws these pitches over the plate and batters struggle with it. The Tigers did not as much. And I'm just waiting to see what will happen. Good news. Increased velocity in the spring. I've been following lots of velocities, if you've not been aware of this. Velocity is a really cool thing to monitor in the spring. He's up a tick so far. Maybe that holds. And also, I'm curious about how the slider will develop. I think with every pitcher, sure, you can have a good fastball, especially one 92. If it's good, great. But you need something else. The slider was good for Ryan, but it wasn't this elite pitch. But hey, I only saw five starts. And maybe this actually is a lot better than I was giving credit for. So I think Joe Ryan is going to be a dependable starter for the Twins. He's going to be able to go every 5 days. He's kind of used to this. But I don't think he's going to also be this massive star that a lot of people are envisioning.
Yeah, I'm under on the major league K rate from the five starts last season, which was already lower than it was at any minor league stop for him. I think he's more of a 8 Ks per nine sort of guy. Great control. If he keeps the ball in the ballpark too, then he could exceed expectations. But I think people have some very unfair ceilings on him because of what we saw at the end of last season. Schedule is a great point, too. That was a very easy schedule when you take it into full context.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. One more great product from LinkedIn. You're there to network, you're there to look for jobs, you're there to post jobs. And how about LinkedIn Sales Navigator? It's a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/baseballshow. That is linkedin.com/baseballshow for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/baseballshow and get started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's talk about the Yankees for a moment. I think we went an hour yesterday without even bringing them up on our season preview show, which makes me think somehow people are sleeping on them relative to other contenders. Is that possible? I mean, that's a loaded rotation with young depth coming. They've got an impact prospect in Anthony Volpe that could come up and give them some help at shortstop in the not-so-distant future. And, of course, they've got the core veterans that project really well all over the place. Like, what are we missing with the Yankees? Why are people kind of looking past them right now in that loaded AL East?
So what's really funny is I think I saw somewhere, I think maybe MLB Network, I don't know, someone ranked the Yankee rotation as the number one rotation. And oh, this was what it was. It was projected WAR. It was SP1, and that's insane to me. That's crazy. I don't think anyone would say, like, oh, who has the best rotation in baseball is the Yankees. Right? Everyone's thinking, no, we need to sign another starter. And I say we, I am from Brooklyn and I want to be happy in life at 5 years old. So yes, I'm a Yankee fan. The Mets are our little brother and we just want them to do well. But I mean, as I've you know, been in this industry, I'm a pitching fan first. I've rooted for Chris Sale against the Yankees. Anyway, Gerrit Cole, Jordan Montgomery, Luis Severino. Jordan Montgomery, I don't think is going to develop as much as some people think. There's too much wrong with his cutter and fastball at the moment. But Severino, yeah, I think he's getting underrated. So I'll give that one. Tyone could actually be good with secondaries working, which is like the last piece of the puzzle of getting some whiffs on the sliders and curveballs. Nestor Cortez, I might be underrating. You know, he's a great Rockies get if you're talking about deceptive fastballs. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, that lineup, and like this is even with saying that Gleyber Torres is a wash now, or he's just not really someone that we care about. Okay, fine. The projected one on roster resource is Josh Donaldson, Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, Giancarlo Stanton, and Joey Gallo. What? Yeah. How many projected home runs in the first two innings between those guys? I mean, it's insane. And then you have Aaron Hicks, who I think a lot of people are undervaluing, finally coming back and being healthy for the Yankees. This is great. It's kind of nuts. And yeah, maybe Torres isn't terrible. That would be pretty cool too. Maybe IKF is fine. That's it. Like, that's your lineup. There's also DJ LeMahieu, who's apparently not even starting. Yeah, it's a good team and the bullpen is stacked. We're underrating them. We definitely are.
They don't have a clear weakness. The weakness would be old age causing them to get hurt more than other teams in their position player group, but they've done a good job in recent years, not only having prospects ready to start filling in based on what they've done in the last 3 to 4 years, but also finding the Gio Urshela types, finding those NRIs that stick around as depth and then come up and play meaningful roles. I think that's a skill that the Yankees front office currently has. Let's talk about the little brother, the Mets. Your words, not mine. Send the shade to Nick, not to me. Can the Mets make the playoffs while missing Jacob deGrom for a significant portion of the season? Part of what made me so excited for them when they got Scherzer was it was a great insurance policy on a possible setback for deGrom. Well, that's playing out right now. So now that we're seeing it, now that we have a loose idea of it being several weeks before deGrom is going to be back, is this a playoff team right now in this division with the changes they've made this offseason?
So let's say Taiwan Walker's knee is, yes, it's hurting a lot, and he's making one start in the next 2 months. Who is starting for the Mets? Is it Trevor Williams? Is it David Peterson?
One of those guys would have to, right? Because you'd have Scherzer, Bassett, Carrasco, yeah, Tyler McGill,
right.
And then one of Peterson or Williams
right.
would be your
and then
five.
Is Carrasco going to be healthy? Is Scherzer going to be healthy? Chris Bassett is already 2.5 ticks down in his velocity. Tyler McGill looks great, though. He's my stream of the day for fantasy because he's thrown 95-97 in the spring. He's increased it by 2 ticks, and that's really cool. Like, that's the one thing that Mets fans should take away right now is get hyped for Tyler McGill. And I hope I'm not saying this and like he just gets destroyed tonight by the Nationals. But I wouldn't be surprised if one of the major stories from today is Tyler McGill being a huge thing. And we talk about that on a Friday. I also wonder, how good is this offense? Have we decided that they did the right things? They got Starling Marte and Mark Canna and Eduardo Escobar. Is that enough? You have Nimmo leading off and then maybe that works out well. And Cano coming back, and is Lindor going to have a resurgence? There are so many questions, and I'm going to rely on one of the most consistent things in baseball, and that is just the Mets just disappointing us. And I'm so sorry. I want it to be different. I'm not saying this as a jab. I'm saying this as a emotional man, but not a blind man. And I don't think this is a playoff caliber team. I think I even had a bold prediction that the Marlins leapfrog the Mets in the NL East, which is bold, I understand. But
that's,
I think,
very
it just
bold.
Highlights how the Mets are just not in the right position right now.
I think the thing that works in their favor, and this is going to be a league-wide trend that I expect to see. We saw a trade on Thursday. The Padres and Twins made a deal. I think teams are going to be more aggressive making trades in April, May, and June than they ordinarily have been because of the funky shape of the offseason with the lockout. Teams didn't get as many chances to restructure the way they wanted to. So when an injury hits or when something doesn't go right, I think we're going to see more teams reacting. Also, having an expanded playoff field, I think, puts us in a situation for that too. With Steve Cohen having that hunger to win and that willingness to open up his checkbook, I think they can keep trying to cover up their flaws. This is a tough spot. I think the Marlins are very good, and the Phillies are a legitimate threat to win the division. I picked them to win it. I think people sleep on how good their rotation is. We'll talk about them in just a moment.
Wait.
The A's, though, we got to finish out. We're going alphabetical, staying on script, and we'll speed it up a little bit because I know we got a game starting here in just over 20 minutes. Once Frankie Montas is traded, who are you tuning in to watch pitch in the Oakland rotation?
Yeah, it's too bad that we have to call him the OKs now.
The OKs.
James Caprillion is the most underrated one, I think. 30% CSW in both the slider and curve last year, four-seamer with a 13% swing strike rate. And then there's also Cole Irvin, who apparently is throwing harder, has a new pitch mix. And I'm curious to see that. I mean, it's going to be a tough weekend against the Phillies in Philly. But those are the guys I think I have my eye on. Maybe AJ Puck. Let's see what the A's do with him. That might be pretty fun as well. But yeah, there isn't much, and I wish I had better news.
If Puck were starting, I'd be excited. And then Adam Aller, I think it's just a great story. I just want to see, what does he bring? Because I've never actually seen him before, and he's just one of those guys they added through all the moves they made, came back in the Bassett trade. But speaking of the Phillies, I think they're strong in the rotation. A healthy Wheeler, healthy Nola, great 1-2 that can give them length. What is the encore going to look like for Ranger Suarez? Is he a back-end guy in the middle of the rotation, or is he more like a front-end guy, or is he just appropriately placed as a number three starter? I have a really hard time getting a clean read on what my expectation is for him for 2022.
Yeah, we've spent so much of our breath talking about Suarez this offseason, and the answer is, I don't know. It's one home run allowed over 1,100 heaters last year, which is just not sustainable. And often the question is like, well, okay, you allow more home runs. He had a sub two ERA. It was like 1.5 ERA last year, both as a reliever and starter. And Ranger Suarez, sure, you had some home runs. That's still like a 3 ERA or so. It doesn't work like that. When you start adding that stuff, it changes confidence, changes the whole dynamic of the game. It's a completely different story. I think Ranger Suarez, ultimately, it's going to come down to his slider or not. He's a changeup fastball guy, 20% swing strike rate on the changeup. Fastballs that avoid the heart of the plate. Sometimes he can get swings and misses on the four-seamer and gets a sinker on the corners. But if he can get that slider consistently for strikes, that can really turn him into kind of a Trevor Rogers almost in a similar approach. I want to see that come to play. I haven't really seen it yet. I want it to exist. I have him above a Toby. If you don't know a Toby, everyone, it's a middling pitcher who just does enough to stick around, but you don't like he's there, like Toby from The Office, just in case you know. So yeah, he'll be like a Holly, is what I hope he can be.
Yeah, Holly is a more interesting character than Toby.
The better version, right?
The better Toby. Yeah, I would agree with that. Staying in Pennsylvania, talking Pirates for a moment. Let's say you get dragged into a pirate-themed bar while taking a walk in the village one afternoon, very likely scenario, and you can't leave this pirate-themed bar until a Pirates starting pitcher has a dominant outing. Who is your choice to take the mound to get you out of that pirate-themed bar?
Oh, man. I'm going to go with Zach Thompson. I'm going to do that.
Wow.
A lot of people want me to do Mitch
Keller,
I'm sure. But Mitch Keller has a super hittable 97 mile per hour fastball, and his breaking stuff has like 3 whiffs over 30 thrown or something. It's like, what? No, that's not how this is supposed to work. But Zach Thompson, cutter and curveball emphasis, we've seen him dominate before. And I mean, define dominant, 6 innings of 1 run ball. Is that what we're talking about? Something like that? Or are we talking like 5 innings of 10 strikeouts or something? Right?
I'll take that too.
Okay. All right. I'm still going to go Zach Thompson.
5 innings, yeah. 2 runs, 10 Ks, or 6-1 would work.
Just six innings and 1 earned run? Zach Thompson. Done. Got it. Zach. I mean, could be JT Brubaker. His slider is still good. As long as he doesn't have the 2 homer per 9 from last year, then that could work. But good old coffee cakes, Brubaker. But no, Zach Thompson's my pick.
Decent chance that in your memoir someday, after your chapter about serving up that dinger to Dellin Betances, you're going to have a chapter about the 14 days you spent at a pirate-themed bar in the village. But we'll see. Let's go to the Padres. I had a question for you about their bullpen before Taylor Rogers was added, so I'll just adapt it accordingly. Is Rogers the clear-cut closer there? Did he go from a committee team in Minnesota to a non-committee team in San Diego, where the question of who's closing for the Padres was simply answered at the last minute on Thursday with that deal?
Yeah, right? That's what you gotta think it is. There was Robert Suarez getting it, but did we really feel good about that one? Now you have Taylor Rogers, who's closed and been great, and like, there's your answer. I think it does open the door for Dylan Nelson Lamet to be this really awesome fireman. I'm super excited for this. And then there's also Drew Pomeranz coming back later on. And it's hard not to love Pierce hooked on the hook Johnson, who throws a near 70% curveball usage, which is wonderful. And I love guys that just throw extreme breaking balls.
Let's go to San Francisco. I think I understand exactly why the Giants would build the rotation this way. I mean, it's a discount. It's like a TJ Maxx Marshall's rotation where it could all work out fine if everyone's healthy. It could be good bargains. Like, injured pitchers come cheaply on the free agent market. Do you think this is good enough? Are they going to be healthy enough to go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers again in the West? Obviously, the Giants were a huge surprise last year, but Webb, Rodon, Desclafani, Wood, Cobb as their core 5. Does this work for the Giants in 2022?
Yeah, it's going to be tough for them. I mean, they really relied heavily on the 168 innings from Descofani, because after that, then it gets to Logan Webb with 148, and then under 140 for both Wood and Rodon, and then it's under 100 for Cobb, right? And all of those guys are going to have to essentially throw more innings than they did last year and stay healthy during it. It's a wonderful rotation. You know, if you want to say like the TJ Maxx thing, like, sure, then they're the little Giants then, right? But maybe Tyler Beede and get some significant innings. He made the opening day roster, and that might be an indication of them saying, look, like, we want to be ready when you get that opportunity. Maybe some Carlos Martinez at some point. I mean, I think actually he didn't even make the team, so he's done now. We're going to see Sam Long as well get those innings, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be those guys having to pick up the slack because we know this is happening. We don't know who it is. But there will be guys that get hurt here. Could be Rodon not lasting after August. One of the major concerns there. So we'll see. I think it can work. It did last year. But it's going to be tough, and it's going to be a major, major question for them.
It was fun last year, for sure, even though I was just loud wrong about what they were going to do as a team. I don't know if I'm doubling down on last year or if I'm just being realistic about the amount of risk they've put on this roster. Let's talk about the Mariners. They came up a bit earlier. For anybody out there who might be concerned about Robbie Ray's past control issues, how would you put their mind at ease?
Oh, easy. Easy. You're going from Toronto and the AL Beast, a very tough place to pitch, to Seattle, where it's a lovely Safeco Park, and you have a much easier division, including the Rangers, and you have the Athletics. You have likely an injured Angels at some point. And you also have a winning ball club with the Mariners. And last year, Robbie Ray, it's a question of, like, can he repeat it? Well, he did it for 30 starts of him saying, look, I'm just going to throw strikes in the zone and pair with a slider. It's not like something that happened for 2 months at the end of last year. He did it for the entire season. It's a very clear indication of being a new pitcher at this point. Yeah, be excited about Robbie Ray. I think he's going to throw a ton of quality innings for Seattle.
Let's talk Cardinals for a moment. They've come up in recent weeks on this show just because we're all kind of concerned about the Jack Flaherty injury and how that impacts their rotation. Jordan Hicks is starting to begin the season. I just didn't see that path for him with that velocity and the movement with that velocity. I just saw a shutdown reliever. How does this play out for him as a starter? Do you think this sticks all season, and do you think he can actually have success in that role?
I honestly doubt it. It seems super late. He's not ready to go. He hasn't been prepping as one the entire spring. It came out of nowhere. Then the sinker is shockingly hittable. It was at 100 miles per hour, but with more than 20% hard contact allowed. That velocity should come down as a starter. It's what we typically see from these relievers. They're able to throw max effort for one inning, but then you got to be a starter. You got to save that throughout the start. And the slider might not get enough strikes. It's teetering around that 60% strike rate that you want to see. You want to see around 63 to 65. Hicks has been around there and a little bit lower. I don't know if this really works. There isn't even a third pitch, too. It's going to take a while for him to get there. And I'm excited as a pitching fan because, cool, this is clearly an electric talent. But those that are just saying, oh, no, Hicks has got this, is incredible. This is along the same lines of Aaron Ashby or like Matt Brash or something like that. But no. This is a significant step down to me.
Yeah, I'm an excited skeptic about Jordan Hicks in the rotation. And that's a strange, it's a little bit of cognitive dissonance to feel those things simultaneously. But that's where I'm at with Hicks. I don't think it's going to work. I want to see if it does, because if it does, it's going to be really exciting. Talking about the Rays here for a moment. I think when healthy, Shane Baz versus Shane McClanahan is a really fun who's the number one. Like, who's the better of those two? Because they're both electric. Baz is hurt right now. And I think looking long term, Nick, who is most likely to push those two guys atop the rotation? When you look at this cast of starters filling out the bottom four spots in this Rays rotation.
I mean, I'm curious to see what Eno says because he loves all of them. And he certainly made me more aware of Drew Rasmussen, or at least more encouraged, especially after watching his last spring training start, which he essentially did sliders and fastballs evenly, which I thought was very, very interesting. Patino, though, seems like the most electric opportunity for the Rays. As long as the slider can become a legitimate pitch, you know, he throws this really, really excellent fastball. And we haven't quite seen the slider become that elite offering that we kind of think it should over time. So he's the one that I'm going to be keying in on the most this season. And remember, Shane Baz is essentially a fastball slider, too. It's not like he has this massive breadth of repertoire. So Patino having an amazing slider on top of that heater, yeah, he can absolutely hold a candle to those two guys.
The Rangers, I think, have done a really good job finding veteran pitching in free agency in recent years. And I'm on board with John Gray. Outside of Colorado, this team is miles ahead of where it was last year. Spent a ton of money this offseason. They're at least going to be fun to watch. I'm still very concerned about their rotation as a whole. What do you make of their other starters? Does anybody else in that group pop for you?
Oh, not really. Dane Dunning could be something. The White Sox gave him and got Lance Lynn for him at the end of 2020. So the Rangers clearly saw something there. And he did have that nice strikeout rate. Slider was way better then, and then it was way worse in 2021. There's talk of Dane Dunning having a new slider now, which is really cool. I can't wait to see it. These are all these things that's like, oh, hey, all these whispers that we've been waiting on for months and months and months, and now today's the day. I'm sorry, I'm just really amped that it's opening day. We have Spencer Howard apparently throwing a little bit harder. And maybe there's something about his secondaries that comes out finally because he's been this extreme fastball guy, but really it should be, hey, where's the slider? Where's the changeup? Taylor Hearn is slightly underrated too, I think. He could become a very effective sinker baller that is getting a ton of ground balls there. I won't say anything about Martin Perez, but I will say Glenn Otto has a fantastic horizontal slider that we might see a good amount of this year and could make an impact. But otherwise, I mean, at the end of the day, not really. I'm not looking at those other starters outside of John Gray and getting excited and really anticipating much.
Yeah, Howard's the guy that I think could take a reasonably large step forward this year, and it would be huge for them as they try and maybe hang around in the wild card race until sometime in the middle of the summer. Shifting the focus to the Blue Jays, almost wrapped up here. Which Jays starter will return the most real-life value in 2022? Plenty to choose from. You got the free agent addition. You got the guy they traded for in Jose Berríos. You got the guy they developed themselves in Alek Manoah. You got the holdover in Ryu. I mean, who do you like here to lead this rotation in value?
It's Ross Stripling. No, it's. I wish it were Alek Manoah, though. I'm a huge fan of what Manoah does with his fastball and his slider, both elite pitches to me. But no, it's Jose Berríos. He's the tried and true, you know, over four war in both 2019 and 2021, the last two full seasons. Yeah, it should be him. I mean, it could be Kevin Gausman. I'm not a Kevin Gausman doubter like a lot of people are. I think his split is the only consistent splitter in the majors, honestly. But you can't bet against Jose Berríos, who's gone 180 innings and WAR is a lot about volume. That's at above a average level. And yeah, that's Berríos, all right. So I put my money on him.
All right. Last question for you as we look at the Washington Nationals. Is there anybody in the Nats rotation to begin the season that you feel is being overlooked? I feel like this is the hardest question of all 30 that I've asked.
Are you serious? This is like, I want to say like all of them?
Really?
Okay. Patrick Corbin's getting overlooked because he essentially had one down year after being in a stud in 2018 and 2019 and increased his velocity in the second half of last year. Actually peaked. Highest velocity of his career was in September of 2021. Why can't, you know, it's just a little tweak away then from him becoming a massive stud again. Josiah Gray, I think we've just kind of like assumed that he's just going to allow home runs forever now, even though he's incredibly young. Two amazing secondaries that he can throw one for a strike, one not so much, but they get a ton of whiffs. Four-seamer also gets whiffs on it. It's just, yeah, stop allowing home runs on that fastball and maybe things can go well. Yoán Adán is kind of cool. He throws mid to upper 90s with a good slider. We saw him for one start on the last day of the season last year, allowed a home run to Rafael Devers, who hasn't. But, I mean, otherwise, he looked pretty good. Paulo Espino had decent innings last year, surprisingly enough. He's not even in the rotation, technically, because there's Eric Fede, who I'm not going to talk about. But then there's also Anibal Sanchez, who, yes, allowed 10 earned runs in spring training, but I heard good things about him for the most part otherwise. And maybe Anibal Sanchez just goes off and gives you six innings of two earned run ball. Like, oh, hey, what's up, Anibal? We've missed you, man. You know, I feel like we're completely ignoring the Nationals rotation, and there is some intrigue in there. Maybe Cade Cuvalli shows up and is actually doing good things in June. I mean, there's a lot of fun potential here.
I like the optimism. And if Steven Strasburg gets healthy this year, they could
Steven
have him back.
Steven Strasburg! How could I forget him? Oh, yeah, right? Who knows?
Not there right now, though.
Right. We'll see.
Adán gives me the Waskery Noah vibes, though, because of the velo and having a good slider, right? Like, this is a guy that kind of pops up out of nowhere, gets a rotation spot, and he can pretty much to be useful for them. This is a team that's very top-heavy. Their first five, first six in their lineup, I think, can put some runs on the board. People are just completely out on the Nationals in general. They could be one of those teams that actually wins more games than expected, even if they're not a playoff team. And I feel like I'm more optimistic about their pitching, having just talked to you about them, than I was drawing conclusions on my own. So you've done a great job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, you've done an amazing job today. These are fantastic questions. I'm just touched. I just got to talk about pitching for over an hour.
I think we had maybe the second longest episode of the Athletic Baseball Show. And for that, Nick, I really appreciate your time, especially just before opening day. We got a game starting in about 5 minutes. Thank you so much for joining me, and tell our listeners again where they can find all your work.
Well, first of all, DVR, you're amazing. You're so good at this. This is such an honor. Ton of fun. Yeah, come by to pitcherlist.com. Find me on Twitter @pitcherlist. We have a ton of podcasts as well to cover everything that you want on our Pitcherlist podcast network. But yeah, I mean, I cover everything pitching and rank top 100 pitchers every Monday, and I cover every single starter every single night in the SP Roundup. So come on by, introduce yourself, and let's just talk about pitching. It's the best thing there is. So much fun! And it's back!
The recaps are incredible. I highly recommend those. If you've got time for one thing to read each day in addition to what you already read, that would be what I recommend you check out. But plenty of great things to check out over at pitcherlist.com. That is going to do it for this episode of The Athletic Baseball Show. If you're looking for a subscription to The Athletic, you can get one for $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/baseball show. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I am at Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Monday. Enjoy opening weekend.